Welcome to ACT Radio, Animal Concerns of Texas. I'm Greg Lawson, a retired National Park Service Ranger, Vice President of the Vegetarian Society of El Paso, and a certified vegan lifestyle coach. ACT is a project of the Vegetarian Society of El Paso. Learn more about us at our website, vsep.org. Today, we'll be talking about farm workers and wildlife with my guests, Jeannie Van Cleef, who's a volunteer coordinator, Carlos Marentes, who's the executive director of Sin Fronteras Organizing Project, and Patricia Palafox, who's a board member of Second Chance Wildlife Rescue. Humans evolved as part of a complex system of life called by some the web of life. Our very existence is due to the coexistence of bees, bears, bobcats, birds, and other life forms. When one strand of the web collapses, it weakens the entire global ecosystem. The fisheries of the world are in a state of decline due to overfishing. Many biologists predict that half of all animals on Earth will be extinct in the next 50 years. Animals are losing their habitats as humans expand to take more land and convert it to farmland to grow feed for livestock. And there are state and federal agencies that kill millions of wild animals each year because they compete with farmed animals for space and food. Honeybees are in serious decline, and bees pollinate over two-thirds of the food humans eat. One of the main reasons for the decline of honeybees is the use of pesticides and herbicides on our farmland, which not only kill bees and other creatures, but they also pose a very serious threat to the farm workers. The anthropocentric view that in order to survive, the human race needs the wild animals of the world. But the larger view is that each individual animal life has worth. And animals should not be exploited or killed because of the human desires for food, clothing, or entertainment. My guests today have devoted their lives to social justice issues, the protection of and rehabilitation of wild animals, and the protection of farm workers. First, I'd like to talk with Carlos Marentes, the executive director of Sin Fronteras. Let's talk about pesticides for a moment. Are we moving closer to more people eating organic, pesticide-free food?
Well, long time ago, a lady wrote a beautiful book.
Silent Spring.
Silent Spring.
Yeah.
And that book, in that time, represented a warning to all of us about the terrible impact of highly toxic chemicals being used to increase production of food, you know, because that's the reason behind using chemicals. We want to exploit more the soil. We want to exploit more people. So therefore, we use these highly toxic chemicals that represent, as you mentioned, a threat to human health, but also represent a threat to all the living aspects of the creation. And not only that, but to nature itself, to Mother Nature, to the water. You know, we live here in a semi-desertic area. Water should be the most sacred element, but we continue to allow this terrible spill of contamination by toxic chemicals in order to produce cheap food products. So, yes, we are still, you know, facing the dilemma of what to do. If we continue, you know, to prefer to have cheap food in the market at the expense of contamination and the killing of species of, you know, and the terrible damage that we are producing to the Chihuahua Desert, which we are part of, that's the dilemma that we are facing today. And it's very important that we help people resolve that dilemma, to make a moral decision, a moral conscious decision to reject pesticides.
Right. I'm very concerned about wildlife and the environment, but, you know, I do compare prices, and often I think to myself, I'll buy this non-organic pesticide-laden food because it's cheap. We've got to think beyond that. We've got to take the warning that Rachel gave us in Silent Spring. We got to take it seriously to heart, or we're going to find ourselves in a world of hurt. So tell us about the volunteer project that you're organizing.
Okay, so we have here in this border region from 5,000 to 12,000 agricultural workers, depending on the month of the year. Right now, we have many workers working in the fields, harvesting the onions that, you know, that will end up in our table in the form of onion for our enchiladas or for other dishes. Unfortunately, these farm workers lack the benefits and the rights that other sector of the labor force enjoy. For example, farm workers are excluded from workers' compensation system, despite the fact that, you know, that the farm labor is a very dangerous occupation. I think it's the fourth or the fifth dangerous occupation in America. They get paid, you know, very low wages. On average, the farm workers of this border region have an annual income of $7,000 or less, not even close to the federal poverty income guidelines. So we have a farm workers center located in Southside El Paso, where we try to help these workers, provide assistance, you know, provide a little bit of humanity and relief to the reality of oppression they suffer every day. And in order to do our mission, to accomplish our mission, to continue to help farm workers and their families, we need the support of the community. We need volunteer people who are willing to donate a few hours, you know, during the week to help us in many things that we, you know, that we do at the Farm Workers Center in favor on behalf of the farm workers and their families.
If people listening would like to volunteer their time or a few dollars, how do they get in touch with you? Where do they go or call?
Well, we encourage people to come and visit the Farm Workers Center. We are located between the two international bridges. Our address is 201 East 9th Avenue. We are right in the corner of 9th Avenue and Oregon Street. They can also call us for more information at 915-532-0921, or 873-8933.
Also with me today, Patricia Palafox has been involved in helping animals for a long time. She's been on the show before when we talked about the chimpanzee problem in Alamogordo, and you probably even been on before that for some reason.
Dogs and cats and yeah. Animal control.
So there's an exciting thing happening with Second Chance Wildlife Rescue, which is the only wildlife rescue in El Paso. They've acquired some new property and plan on building a new center. So how's that coming? Tell us about it.
Well, first, let me say we're not the only wildlife rescue organization in El Paso. There are others.
Oh, yeah.
However, we're going to be the first one. We acquired 7 acres of land. We'll be the first one that'll exist independent of somebody's home. Most of the wildlife organizations, and there's 3 or 4 in town, have to have it in the rehabilitator's home or somewhere on the grounds, because there is no center, you know, apart from the homes. And it's during the season, it's a 24-hour job, 7 days a week, to when the animals come in and they're rescued and they're rehabilitated. So it's an incredible imposition on people's lives. But the rehabilitators that are in town, and there's only, I think, 4 or 5, they do a heroic effort. The state licenses them. In order to get a license, their property has to be approved. So they have to have the appropriate aviaries and the sizes. And, you know, there are all sorts of requirements to get the license. The license isn't the person. The license is the property as run by the person. So you have to give up your house and your life, basically, to do this. Well, last year we got a very generous donation from a donor and gave us 7 acres of property in Vinton that has trees, a house, and a barn and stables and a wetland on it. And we, you know, they gave it to us on the basis that we would preserve the wildlife that is on it now and that we would be able to do our wildlife center there. So we're in the process now of building aviaries and converting the home, updating the home so that we can actually begin to do our wildlife rehab. In the meantime, it's still at the home of our president, Josie Karam, who's been doing this for years and years out of her home. We are a 501c3 organization, which means that any donations to us are tax deductible. So that's what's happening now that's different than what we've been doing over the years, is we're going to have a standalone center that we hope will allow us to bring in much more wildlife than we have before.
I was looking at your website, and it said you get like 20 or 30 birds a day.
Often.
And they go right now they're going into somebody's house?
Well, no, they have to go. They're going into aviaries and rooms that have, they have to be appropriate. It just can't, you just can't put them in your bedroom.
Right.
Because the Texas Parks and Wildlife won't certify you for that.
Right.
So you have to have the appropriate cages or aviaries or whatever, and a bathroom, a cleaning facility. You have to have certain things in order for them to say, okay, this is appropriate to bring these wild animals in. So, but it's somewhere in their yard, somewhere in their front yard, their backyard, you know, the aviary is behind. That's how it's done now, at least in El Paso.
I was talking with Pat before our show started today, and she was telling me how it's illegal to take in wildlife unless you are a licensed rehabilitator. You're supposed to take the animal to a wildlife rehabilitation center like Second Chance Wildlife. But it seems to me that it might be dangerous if you're picking up a raccoon or a skunk or something. Can you call rescuers to,
yes,
to come
yes.
in?
Yes, we have a dispatch number that you can call and get advice on what to do. And, of course, we would advise that rather than having you trying to get the animal yourself. And with birds, many times that number will help you know what to do. And we also have on our webpage, and we are at secondchancewildliferescue.org, but there's a whole thing about what to do with a baby bird, because during baby bird season, you know, our high winds in El Paso, they get blown out of nest, or maybe they're not blown out of nest. Maybe they're just learning to fly. So people need to know, what do we do? They call us and we give them advice like, have you seen the parents there? What does it look like? Send us a picture. Maybe it still belongs in a nest, in which case, put it back. Do you know what to put? Here's the way to make a nest. Put it back so the parents can feed them, because that's a lot easier than them bringing it to us and us feeding them. Now, if there's a situation, of course, we can say, no, bring it in. And it's dangerous, especially to the baby birds or baby wildlife, to try to take care of them, because you just might do the wrong thing for them. And little baby birds need to eat a lot and often. So waiting a day or two, you probably, I don't know that we can save that little baby if you waited a day or two. And the story I like to tell, and it was a very, very well-meaning lady. I do not have any criticism of her at all. But she found a baby bird, and when she brought it to us the next day, and we always ask, what were you feeding it? And she said, spaghetti. And we said, spaghetti? I said, how did you give it spaghetti? Well, she stuffed it in the mouth. And again, it's a very well-meaning act. But you don't give a baby bird spaghetti. In fact, your best thing is to not to give them anything. Call somebody and then figure out what to do. So our dispatch number is 920-7867. That's 920-7867. And we also, you can look on our webpage, secondchancewildliferescue.org, to get the number and see what you should do. If it's late at night, just call and look about baby birds. And also, if you can go to Facebook, we'd love to have you like us, because we're trying to get enough likes to get another organization to work with us. But they said, we need more likes before they will work with us on a fundraising. So Second Chance Wildlife Rescue is the Facebook that we'd like likes. So that's the situation. We also have a lot of needs for volunteers, for items, any kind of home cleaning items such as brooms and dustpans and buckets and garbage bags. We even have a need for a golf cart. Anybody up there have an old golf cart they no longer need? Now that we have 7 acres of property, it would be great to get a golf cart. Hmm. Gift cards at Home Depot, Lowe's, you know, in our name, or your vet. Go to your vet and put in our name and say, this is a, you know, we want to donate $25, $30 to Second Chance Wildlife Rescue. And then when we go in to take the animals, because there's many things we need a vet for, that we'll have a little credit there.
So you don't have to know about wildlife to volunteer to help out.
Oh, no, not at all. We can put you to sweeping floors. But no, and if you really, really are interested in helping the actual hands-on, then we give training and get you in really slowly because, of course, we have licensed rehabilitators there that will, and then if there's people who work under the licensed rehabilitators that are, you know, they're supervised by the rehabilitators. So you don't have to know about wildlife, but, you know, there's a lot of things that could be done to help. And like I say, we're building right now. So if you know construction, you can do construction. You have construction materials. That would be great.
Plumbing,
electrical. Materials, electrical, all of that is stuff that's on our wish list, believe it or not. You know.
Right. And there is a wish list at secondchancewildliferescue.org.
Correct.
And you can also donate from their website. So be sure to go to their website and check it out. Yes,
and if
Jenny.
If I can just jump in. Also, something Pat and I have talked about is I think they also have a need for people with grant writing and publicity experience because they're basically running a capital campaign now to try to get the new facility built. So if anyone out there has that experience, I think that
absolutely, and even experience just fundraising. If you've been in an organization on a board and you know how to put together some fundraising event or a golf event or a dinner event, anything like that, we really would love to have that kind of help.
Yeah, that sounds like a great opportunity. Jenny, how long have you been working with social justice issues and wildlife and domestic animals?
Sure.
All your life?
Since at least 98, I've been working with mainly on animal issues. I volunteered with the Vegetarian Society way back in 98 or 99 when I first moved back to town. And
we'd like to have you back.
We would too.
For years I worked with Pat, actually, with Pets Alive El Paso. I was on the, at the time, the City County Animal Shelter Advisory Committee. I was on that committee for a few years. I've been involved mainly in domestic animal welfare and spay-neuter issues in particular.
Uh-huh.
Now I'm at a point in my volunteer life where I'd like to branch out a little bit and, you know, I think all social justice issues are connected, basically, and I've always regretted that. I mean, it was important, I think, at the time for me to put my head down and concentrate on the spay-neuter stuff because we had a lot of work to do. But we did eventually get to a point where I could pass the torch a little bit, and now I feel like I have the freedom to try to, you know, help out in other ways. So I've actually only been with Sin Fronteras for a few weeks. I went to Demarentis and asked him if he needed volunteers, and he said yes, and I said, what do you need volunteers for? And he listed about a whole bunch of things, and I said, well, maybe I can help actually as a volunteer recruiter and coordinator then to try to, you know, bring more people into the organization. So that's what I plan to work on with them. So I have a list here of their needs. If we have a few minutes, you're getting a signal from the from the booth there.
Go right ahead.
Okay. So some of the things that we've talked about, and please jump in to Mr. Marentis, but they have a big need for clerical work there, and that involves everything from filing to reception to they provide medical and legal services to these folks in addition to material assistance other services. So, you know, there's a need for people to come in and do documentation related to case management. And then they have, they're looking for people with an interest in history to come in. They have file boxes full of documents related to the Bracero project. Maybe you can describe that briefly.
Yes, we have what we call the Bracero project. which is an attempt to rebuild the history of the Mexican peasants who came to this country to work between 1942 and 1964 under the so-called Bracero program, which was a temporary program negotiated by the United States government with Mexico to, you know, as a result of World War II, we needed somebody to take care of the countryside. So between 1942 and 1964, we brought 5 million Mexicans to this country to work in the countryside. The Bracero program ended, and we don't even give the thanks for their contribution to our society. So we have this project that is attempting to document that history so we can educate the population.
Historical volunteers.
Historical volunteers, anybody with an interest in social, you know, social justice history or agricultural policy history, even.
Right. People get in touch with you if they'd like to help?
Should they call you, Mr. Merges, or should they call me?
Well, Jenny, we can give your
email. Sure, if people would like to contact me directly, it's 915-373-8546 or Jenny, which is jennieg@gmail.com. Yeah. Super fast, other things we need. We need people with this organization also, people with a background in publicity, fundraising, people who can do maintenance and cleaning, people who can do kitchen work, including managing a community garden that they have there at the center where they're trying to grow some of their own food. What have I left out? Those are the main areas, and then there are lots of subtasks under each of those areas. We can keep pretty much anybody with any interest in anything busy.
You don't have to be out hoeing weeds.
No, not at all.
Okay.
If you want to do that, you could come to our property.
All right. So we talked about how all these social justice problems are interconnected, and I know that, for example, immigrants from Mexico are exploited by the meat industry very heavily. In fact, Tyson Foods has a recruiting office in Mexico, and they've been slapped on the wrist several times for providing false documentation and bringing people from Mexico to work in slaughterhouses. That's also one of the top most dangerous jobs in the United States, is working in a slaughterhouse. And that's why, you know, when you move to a plant-based diet, you're not only helping the pigs and the chickens and the cows, you're helping immigrants that work in slaughterhouses. You're helping protect the bears and the wolves that are being killed by the federal government because they endanger farmed animals. So that's why here at ACT Radio, we try to encourage people to go to a plant-based diet for the good of the whole earth.
Greg, can I make a comment?
Yeah, of course.
A final comment, and really appreciate the opportunity to be in this program. In this country, we don't produce food to feed people. We produce food to fabricate food. One example is, you know, you go to the Midwest and you see all those cornfields, and they are produced not to feed people, not to satisfy the nutrition needs of the population and be part of a healthy life for people. Most of that corn is used for the meatpacking industry.
Of course, yeah.
And, you know, and what is the result? The result is that the meatpacking industry is not only the responsible for, you know, for the exploitation that's going on against many of them farm workers, but also is one of the main responsible for the greenhouse emissions that help, you know, that is the cause of global warming. So there's a tie between, you know, to what you said, you know, the we need to become more active in, you know, trying to preserve wildlife, you know, trying to protect Mother Nature, the resources, the natural resources, but also the well-being of human beings.
You know, we talked about pesticides earlier, too. And while there are limits on how much pesticides and herbicides can be put on food meant for humans, they're allowed to put a whole lot more of those dangerous chemicals on feed for livestock. And they're stored in the fat of the animals. And so, you're getting a dangerous level of pesticides from the animal food you eat. I want to thank you all for being with me on the program today. In the archives of ACT Radio, which you can find by clicking on the Listen to Past Shows button on ktep.org, we'll provide the contact information for the guests that have been on the show today. And also be sure and visit the Vegetarian Society of El Paso at vsep.org. Find out about the upcoming events we're having. We have a movie called What the Health that's one of the best movies that I've seen in recent years about the health industry and why a plant-based diet is being suppressed by medical organizations. So you'll want to learn more about that, and our dinner's coming up at vsep.org. Until next time, I'm Greg Lawson. For the Earth, the animals, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to ACT Radio.